AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Winter's Children, the celebration of Nordic skiing, is the latest book from Ryan Rogers. Ryan Rogers joining us to talk about his book here about the Nordic skiing and how it has shaped the upper Midwest sports scene. Ryan, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. This is what I find to be interesting about this. I wanted to interview you this for this reason. My dad, who passed away a few years ago, was an Iron Ranger for life. And for some reason, they got into 16-millimeter films in the 1920s. And as a matter of fact, the films are actually over at the Minnesota Historical Society because no one was doing that sort of thing at that point. And one of the things that was in there was a lot of people Nordic skiing, and including my dad, who I don't think I ever saw my dad Nordic ski in my entire life. But when he was a kid, here he is out skiing across northern Minnesota with everyone else. It was much more of a deal. And I've come to realize that there is a culture here that I'm not saying it's not vibrant there. I think the cross-country skiing community up in northern Minnesota is incredibly vibrant. But as far as almost kind of a day-to-day thing, it seems to be a much more common thing to have happened that, you know, people just skied. When it got winter, you just skied everywhere.
You know, it really was, especially before World War II, and it was mostly taken for granted. It was just something people did in the winter, and they didn't necessarily record it. I mean, that's great that those videos are there. I'll have to look for those. I wasn't familiar with them. Yeah, but especially up on the Iron Range, all these many Scandinavian descended people, it was just something they did.
Oh yeah, they'd ski in. They were skiing into like a Squagama Country Club over by Bowabic and going in there because that was the only way. No one was plowing that area. It was all summer only cabins, for goodness sakes. And so yeah, but they got around. They'd get out to the ice. They'd go through town. It really was kind of a side of my father, and I think of the Iron Range at that point that I don't think a lot of people realize how important that was, not just as a sport, but just as a way to get around.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it really, with World War II, that changed. The popular type of skiing became downhill skiing, and, you know, more and more people got cars, and the road network increased and was better. But, yeah, prior to the war, I mean, it was just something many people did to get from point A to point B.
I don't think it's too much of a surprise that Nordic skiing comes over with kind of the Scandinavians. They move into the upper Midwest. It looks familiar territory for them. I know there's all these old picture graphs and things like this from Europe where you see people skiing and stuff like this. How common was it? Fairly common in the Scandinavian countries? You know, this was the way you got around in winter?
Yeah, it was very common. And really, as a sport, it hadn't developed all that earlier from the time that it was brought here. It was really in the, you know, kind of the mid-1800s that skiing became a sport as we know today. But it had been there for centuries as a form of transportation and casual recreation.
Well, it's kind of funny. We used to run away from things, and now we run for fun. It's kind of one of those things. It evolves over time in some cases. There was just a practicality because, obviously, these Scandinavian winters, and they were pretty brutal, and you know, it was the one of the best ways to get around. I mean, the way you describe it is that these were incredibly the first – you know, these first immigrants that were here that got into this were using very crude versions of these skis. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, they were homemade. I don't know if I'd call them crude. Some of them were. I mean, it was a, you know, it was a cottage industry. It was like a traditional craft that people knew that they picked up from their parents, and everybody knew how to make everybody within these certain groups knew how to make a pair of skis, a solid wood ski from a single piece of wood. It was part of an annual ritual, a thing that people would do. They'd fashion themselves a pair of skis for the winter ahead.
Mm-hmm. And there was, and as you said, it was much more of a practical thing back then. I mean, especially you live in a place like northern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, lots of snow. You're pretty much at that point, we're snowed in from probably in some cases, even late October all the way into March. It was, you know, just the practical way to get around, especially, you know, to avoid from, you know, sinking down in 3 feet of snow everywhere you went.
Yeah, and, you know, some of these skis were pretty incredible. I saw a pair that had been fashioned on the North Shore more than 100 years ago, and it was engraved. The tops of the skis were engraved with just incredible detail, designs and hearts, and mm-hmm. it was, you know, it was really a piece of art. And the theory is that that had been a pair of church skis. It would be the, you know, the fancy skis that the owner would ski to church with on Sunday.
So I guess that doesn't surprise me, because just the way, you know, the way people used to do things, it used to be much more serious on that level. But it kind of evolved at that point. I mean, obviously they bring them here with us. At what point did that cultural shift happen to where, okay, we're going to have the formal skis, we're going to have this setup here, and things became much more ingrained in the upper Midwest with the Nordic skiing?
Well, one thing I had no idea about skiing was that the mass production of skis began here in the upper Midwest, started by Scandinavian immigrants who kind of, you know, they applied their cottage industry knowledge of how to make skis with the American ideal of mass production. And so these factories started popping up in Wisconsin and Minnesota. And for the first time ever, skis were produced in these factories. I don't know if I'd call them large, but they were fair-sized factories. And back home in Norway, they'd always been made by small-scale craftsmen.
I mentioned the practicality of getting around on this. It started evolving, though, and becoming its own thing, its own sport. What I find to be fascinating about this is that, I mean, we think about, you know, Nordic skiing, kind of traditional cross-country skiing, but it seems like that there was a, you know, that all of a sudden ski jumping kind of started evolving for it. Was ski jumping always part of the original Nordic skiing?
You know, it always was. It evolved with the sport. And again, when I started this project, I had no idea about this great jumping history, that prior to World War II, ski jumping was a mainstream sport all around the country. I mean, it was big time. The downhill hadn't come onto its own yet. Cross country was just this taken for granted thing that you do to, you know, get to grandma's house from your farm. And jumping was the thing. That's, you know, I've heard people call it the original extreme sport. That's what the kids were interested in.
When did that start up? When did all, you know, from your research, when did you start seeing that, you know, that the ski jumps started becoming more prevalent?
Well, the Norwegians had been ski jumping for fun for, you know, who knows how long. The great Sondre Norheim, who was kind of the first star skier ever, had jumped off the snowy rooftops of the cottages in Telemark, Norway, where he lived prior to emigrating to the Midwest. And so it had evolved hand in hand with cross country. It was, you know, it was a show of skill, and plus I'm sure it's really fun.
Well, I fun is a different perspective. The idea of doing that, I go over, because we do have the Highland ski jump over here by my house, and I go and I'll go watch in the winter. I'm like, nope. it's an amazing sport, and you can, from what you just described, you can easily see how it became one. I mean, you're in much more hilly country with the fjords and all these things. You kind of have houses in the way. It kind of sets up naturally. I can see how something like this develops. But man, that is, you've got to be gutsy. I'm sorry, you've got to be gutsy, in my opinion, to go do one of those jumps. That's some tough stuff right there.
I've never ski jumped. I never will ski jump. I can say with confidence. But, you know, if you start when you're a little kid and you start on these small jumps, I visited some ski jumps around the Midwest, and the kids start on these very small jumps. They're just little tiny bumps. And if you gradually work your way up, I mean, I can see it. You know, you yeah. build up that tolerance to the exposure and just slowly learn.
Well, and as you said, they used to be everywhere. I mean, there was one over at Theo Wirth, I believe they had one there for a while. The only two I know of out by themselves are the one in Highland, and there's that one up in Cloquet. And that's still, I don't know if even that one's in use, though. I mean, and I think Giants Ridge might have one now, too. But, you know, these were more common. My dad always said that there were more ski jumps. He remembers when there were ski jumps, kind of like when they're drive-in theaters. You know, there used to be much more around here than there are today.
Yeah, you're right. Worth had a big jump. That's been gone for some time.
Yeah.
Bush Lake down in Bloomington, Burnsville has one. Yet Cloquet still has their jump, and the the other one you mentioned that the St. Paul Ski Jumping Club jumps at. Yeah, there aren't many, but they were. I mean, they were all over the place. Duluth used to have four. Now Duluth no longer has any ski jumps. Many small towns in the north had their own ski jumps. Some were small, some were huge, and almost all of those are gone now as the sport has dwindled. Although there are still ski jumpers out there, and you know, it's a niche sport of passionate jumpers that it's still going on.
Ryan Rogers joining us, Winter Children, a celebration of Nordic skiing. Let's get back to Nordic skiing here a little bit, because it seems like, this goes back to the St. Paul Winter Carnival, this idea that, oh, here are all these poor people, the James J. Hills, that live out here in this godforsaken winter territory. And there was this real push, 1880s, 1890s, 1900s, to say, no, we like it here. We like it here. We like winter. We are not afraid of this. This is what we do. I imagine Nordic skiing kind of came hand in hand with that, because this was a great sport to highlight the fact that, you know, no, we don't just sit inside our houses for 6 months every year.
Yeah, and that's for sure. Ski jumping came up with the first St. Paul Winter Carnival, which was prompted by some derogatory comment from a East Coast bigwig saying that it likened Minnesota to Siberia, unfit for living in winter, and that prompted the first St. Paul Winter Carnival, which did include, those early carnivals did include skiing, both cross country and ski jumping. And you know, it's a good philosophy. People are always commenting on how, you know, happy and healthy the Scandinavians are, but they do have this philosophy of getting outside and enjoying the winter rather than hiding from it. And skiing's the perfect way to live that.
Oh, I couldn't live in Minnesota if I didn't go out and enjoy this. And I'll go cross country skiing over at Highland and some of the area parks, which is nice. I to a point, I think I'll get to that here in a second. I want to actually talk about a few things. The Birkebeiner still is going on here. You do also talk a lot about the Arrowhead Derby. There used to be much more of these competitions that were out there that don't exist anymore, which, it's a shame, because they would be, I imagine they'd be lined with people at this point in time, because it'd be so much fun to watch.
Well, the Arrowhead Derby was a great race, and it only happened the one time. It was part of the Winter Carnival. I forget the year, if it was 1940 or 1939. It was right in there, and it went from Duluth to St. Paul over the course of 5 days. And it was, it's a shame they never did it again, because it sounded like a fantastic race, and the big skiers some of the big skiers of the time, cross-country skiers of the time, participated, and it really turned into an epic, when in many places they were just skiing along Highway 61 over pretty marginal snow.
On the old Forest Road, yeah, that they came down there, yeah. What's interesting is, and we'll talk, I guess we can touch on this now, because you did mention that the sport kind of has faltered since World War II. Why do you feel the Birkebeiner has been able to hold on with it? Because, I mean, that is huge. That is, I've got friends that own cabins up there that make enough money off just the rentals from those 2 weeks to afford the cabin for the year. I mean, so many people come in for that. How do you feel that one held on so tightly?
Well, Nordic skiing did falter with World War II, but then in the late 60s, 1970s, cross country took off for really the first time ever. I mean, I would, you know, cross country's in kind of a golden age right now. You've got more and more parks manufacturing snow to try to compensate for the warming winters, and I mean, high school leagues are huge, youth yeah. leagues are huge, and it's really taken off as you know, people started looking for ways to stay fit. And you know, after World War II, you had more people moving into cities and a more sedentary lifestyle taking hold, and the World War II years had been hard, the Depression before that, and for a while people kind of hunkered down. But then, as they got tired of that in the late 60s and 70s, they started looking for ways to, you know, get back into nature and get in shape, and cross-country skiing fit that bill perfectly for winter.
Well, and if I can correct myself, you're exactly right, because it just changed. I mean, it wasn't so much more of a practicality or an exposition sport. It became a lifestyle. And I talked to Jesse Diggins a few years ago. I had an opportunity to chat with her, and you're right. I mean, they have created this. But I think one of the things that happened, and I was going to touch on this earlier, like in Minnesota, it's just the city grew. And so what you have now, as you just described, those dedicated parks, dedicated areas, that's go ski over here, as opposed to that ability to, I'm going to go ski into the downtown sort of thing. Not saying that some people don't do that. There are people that do that. But for the most part, I think it just the way that it was presented, it became, as we as a society evolved our exercise regimes, it became a sensational one to do. I got to imagine as well the equipment changing somewhat. That, you know, becoming, you know, the fiberglass, the ability of the affordability of it, the fact that you didn't have to carve your own sort of thing, that helped as well.
I think skis were a lot more affordable 100 years ago, back when the Strand Ski Company was turning out wooden boards out of New Richmond, Wisconsin. But they've, you know, price-wise, they've really gone up. But yeah, I mean, they're obviously, the technology has drastically improved. Although, interestingly enough, the basic design is still pretty similar. You look at an old ski, you look at a new ski, they have the same basic shape to them. Of course, now we're using space-age synthetic materials as opposed to wood.
And they do, and they're lighter, and like you said, it's what's interesting is the way that we train today, and I've got kids, and you know, they run in the spring and the summer, and then they want to ski, you know, in the winter. It's a way to stay in shape. But I do love the reminiscence of this book, of going back and looking at communities, especially some of the photos you have in here of the towns where, you know, the streets are packed with people skiing, and just on what looks like just a regular day or a weekend festival. And it's just, I think that is, to a point, that's important here, is that the way that this was back then, and how it arose here, and how it was kind of that expo kind of a sport that, you know, had these big events and the ski jumping, the hugeness of it, as you said, the first extreme sport. I think that can kind of get lost here with the history of it now, just basically people heading over to a park and skiing around on, like in that kind of venue.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I do think in decades past, skiing was more akin to sledding. It was a informal activity just done for the heck of it without much discipline to it. Whereas now, you know, I live here in Duluth, and you can literally go through a different ski trail every day of the week when there's snow. And I mean, there are a lot of people out on the trails, and every day. I really think that the way people have embraced skiing now is something that they've made more of an effort to do it than they had in the past, where it's just something you did when you're looking for something to do and you didn't necessarily, you know, have a goal. They probably weren't out, you know, trying to ski a certain number of kilometers in a year. It was just, you know, let's go outside and have something to do because, you know, the TV's not invented yet. Whereas now, I mean, the Burka Binder is huge, and there are many, many citizen ski races, and there are a lot of really hardcore skiers who train very, you know, very focused manner all year long. And, you know, and it's also true that there are a lot of people who just do it for fun, which, you know, is kind of obviously at the heart of it. But, you know, if you ski, you know, you want to be doing it. It's, people who ski now, it's a choice. The choice they make, and they, you know, it's a conscious decision.
Well, as my dad said when he was skiing when he was younger, he said if you tried to snowshoe out there, you'd be exhausted within a half a mile. You could ski out there, could ski 3 miles to the bay you wanted to be on. It was just there's a practicality to it. There's an enjoyment as far as the sport and the sensationalism. I would love to see. I always get so depressed at the Olympics when we don't do better on ski jumping. You'd think that Americans would be phenomenal at something like that, but hopefully it'd be great if we could see we could get that back again, because I think that. Once again, that's the character of the upper Midwest, Wisconsin, Minnesota. You get this we're not afraid of winter mentality, and I think that the Nordic skiing is a prime example of that.
Well, the only time a U.S. ski jumper has won a medal was back in the days when most of the ski jumping team had immigrated from Norway. I mean, it only happened one time, and Anders Haugen, he lived in Minnesota, he won the bronze medal. Way back, I think it was 19. No, I'm not going to remember the date offhand, but it was several decades ago.
Ryan Rogers, Winter's Children, A Celebration of Nordic Skiing. The book is out now. Congratulations on this. Very good. And all my best on this. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Matt. Thanks for having me.
You got it. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.